Thanks, guys. Tim, alcoholic.
Hey, Tim.
If anybody needs a book, it's up here if you want to get one. And we're on Two Wives. We're going to do three chapters in a row that are Al-Anon chapters. So it's technically written to the non-alcoholic, but I happen to think that they're good. There's a lot of good fodder in here for sponsors or us as alcoholics dealing with other alcoholics. I think it can keep our relationships on a more sober footing. All right, so we're on page 104. Two Wives, note, bottom of the page. Written in 1939, when there were few women in AA, this chapter assumes that the alcoholic in the home is likely to be the husband. But many of the suggestions given here may be adapted to help the person who lives with a woman alcoholic, whether she is still drinking or is recovering in AA. A further source of help is noted on page 121. Okay, top of the page again. With few exceptions, our book thus far has spoken of men. But what we have said applies quite as much to women. Our activities in behalf of women who drink are on the increase. What's the current stat for women membership in AA? Anybody know that? How many? It was at one time. It's actually jumped a bit in the last few years. There is a, this is actually a copy of a pamphlet, but the current number is 38%. So that's a nice stat. I had a note here to myself, which I wrote in 2011, is 35%. What was that? What did I miss? So 38%. There is every evidence that women regain their health as readily as men if they try our suggestions. But for every man who drinks, others are involved. The wife who trembles in fear of the next debauch. The mother and father who see their son wasting away. Among us are wives, relatives, and friends whose problem has been solved, as well as some who have not yet found a happy solution. We want the wives of Alcoholics Anonymous to address the wives of men who drink too much. What they say will apply to nearly everyone bound by ties of blood or affection to an alcoholic. So as you can see there, that is sort of a preface to the chapter. So the person who wrote Two Wives is Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson writes the rest of this, wrote that first part too, but that's as the big book authors. The rest of this chapter is written by Bill as a wife. And the story goes that originally he wanted Ann Smith to write it. She declined. And in Lois Remembers, Lois Wilson's autobiography, she had resentments over not being asked second. So that's interesting. So here it is. As wives of Alcoholics Anonymous, we would like you to feel that we understand as perhaps few can. We want to analyze mistakes we have made. We want to leave you with the feeling that no situation is too difficult and no unhappiness too great to be overcome. We have traveled a rocky road. There is no mistake about that. We have had long rendezvous with hurt pride, frustration, self-pity, misunderstanding, and fear. These are not pleasant companions. We have been driven to maudlin sympathy, maudlin, overly emotional, to bitter resentment. Some of us veered from extreme to extreme, ever hoping that one day our loved ones would be themselves once more. Our loyalty and the desire that our husbands hold up their heads and be like other men have begotten all sorts of predicaments. We have been unselfish and self-sacrificing. We have told innumerable lies to protect our pride and our husbands' reputations. We have prayed, we have begged, we have been patient. We have struck out viciously, we have run away, we have been hysterical. We have been terror-stricken, we have sought sympathy. We have had retaliatory love affairs with other men. Our homes have been battlegrounds many an evening. In the morning, we have kissed and made up. Our friends have counseled chucking the men, and we have done so with finality, only to be back in a little while hoping, always hoping. our men have sworn great solemn oaths that they were through drinking forever. We have believed them when no one else could or would. Then in days, weeks, or months, a fresh outburst. We seldom had friends at our homes, never knowing how or when the men of the house would appear. We could make few social engagements. We came to live almost alone. When we were invited out, our husbands sneaked so many drinks that they spoiled the occasion. If, on the other hand, they took nothing, their self-pity made them killjoys. There was never financial security. Positions were always in jeopardy or gone. An armored car could not have brought the pay envelopes home. The checking account melted like snow in June. Sometimes there were other women. How heartbreaking was this discovery? How cruel to be told they understood our men as we did not. The bill collectors, the sheriffs, the angry taxi drivers, the policemen, the bums, the pals, and even the ladies they sometimes brought home. Our husbands thought we were so inhospitable. Joy killer, nag, wet blanket. That's what they said. Next day they would be themselves again, and we would forgive and try to forget. We have tried to hold the love of our children for their father. We have told small tots that father was sick, which was much nearer the truth than we realized. They struck the children, kicked out door panels, smashed treasured crockery, and ripped the keys out of pianos. In the midst of such pandemonium, they may have rushed out threatening to live with the other woman forever. In desperation, we have even got tight ourselves, the drunk to end all drunks. The unexpected result was that our husbands seemed to like it. Perhaps at this point we got a divorce and took the children home to father and mother. Then we were severely criticized by our husband's parents for desertion. Usually we did not leave. We stayed on and on. We finally sought employment ourselves as destitution faced us and our families. We began to ask medical advice as the sprees got closer together. The alarming physical and mental symptoms, the deepening pall of remorse, pall is gloomy effect, the deepening pall of remorse, depression, inferiority that settled down on our loved ones. These things terrified and distracted us. As animals on a treadmill, we have patiently and wearily climbed, falling back in exhaustion after each futile attempt to reach solid ground. Most of us have entered the final stage with its commitment to health resorts, sanitariums, hospitals, and jails. Sometimes there were screaming delirium and insanity. Death was often near. Under these conditions, we naturally made mistakes. Some of them rose out of ignorance of alcoholism. Sometimes we sensed dimly that we were dealing with sick men. I underline this. Had we fully understood the nature of the alcoholic illness, we might have behaved differently. So I think this is a good point for us to make sure that if we are dealing with somebody and we do get an opportunity to talk to the spouse, male or female, is that they need to understand the twofold disease. Right? Because once that is crystal clear, once it is understood that we are powerless, that means choice is not in the equation. Choice of drinking or not drinking cannot be in the equation. We are beyond human aid. What do we have choice of? Doing the work. So until you do the solution, until you work at the solution, you have no choice. When you're in the solution, working on the solution, have done the solution, now you need to maintain the solution, that's all choice. Prior to the solution, there is no choice. You are powerless over it. Key important point to remember. How could men who love their wives and children be so unthinking, so callous, so cruel? There could be no love in such persons, we thought. And just as we were being convinced of their heartlessness, they would surprise us with fresh resolves and new attentions. For a while, they would be their old sweet selves, only to dash the new structure of affection to pieces once more. Ask why they commenced to drink again. They would reply with some silly excuse or none. It was so baffling, so heartbreaking. Could we have been so mistaken in the men we married? When drinking, they were strangers. Sometimes they were so inaccessible that it seemed as though a great wall had been built around them. And even if they did not love their families, how could they be so blind about themselves? What had become of their judgment, their common sense, their willpower? There is no willpower. There is no willpower, right? This is the wife asking the question, remember, right? Why could they not see that drink meant ruin to them? Why was it, when these dangers were pointed out, that they agreed and then got drunk again immediately? These are some of the questions which race through the mind of every woman who has an alcoholic husband. We hope this book has answered some of them. Perhaps your husband has been living in that strange world of alcoholism where everything is distorted and exaggerated. You can see that he really does love you with his better self. Of course, there is such a thing as incompatibility. But in nearly every instance, the alcoholic only seems to be unloving and inconsiderate. It is usually because he is warped and sickened that he says and does these appalling things. Today, most of our men are better husbands and fathers than ever before. That means even pre-alcoholism. That's interesting. Try not to condemn your alcoholic husband no matter what he says or does. He is just another very sick, unreasonable person. Treat him, when you can, as though he had pneumonia. When he angers you, remember that he is very ill. There is an important exception to the foregoing. We realize some men are thoroughly bad-intentioned, that no amount of patience will make any difference. An alcoholic of this temperament may be quick to use this chapter as a club over your head. Don't let him get away with it. If you are positive he is one of this type, you may feel you had better leave. Is it right to let him ruin your life and the lives of your children? Here's what I double underlined. Especially when he has before him a way to stop his drinking and abuse if he really wants to pay the price. So once he's been exposed to the solution and he chooses not to do it, all of the prior to that is in effect. Once he has been given the solution and chooses not to and is still an abusive person, he or she, that's when you can consider that this is not a salvageable situation. But not until then. Not until the solution has been put before them. The problem with which you struggle usually falls within one of four categories. One, your husband may be only a heavy drinker. His drinking may be constant, or it may be heavy only on certain occasions. Perhaps he spends too much money for liquor. It may be slowing him up mentally and physically, but he does not see it. Sometimes he is a source of embarrassment to you and his friends. He is positive he can handle his liquor, that it does him no harm, that drinking is necessary in his business. He would probably be insulted if he were called an alcoholic. The world is full of people like him. Some will moderate or stop altogether, and some will not. Of those who keep on, a good number will become true alcoholics after a while. So alcoholic number one is not an alcoholic. The most you could say is a potential alcoholic. So that means self-will is still in effect. The doctor can say you have an enlarged liver, and he can say, oh, you're kidding me, I do, and give up booze, and that be the end of it. Might be a little bit of a struggle, might have to use a little bit of doctor stuff, but can make that decision and have no use for any other things that we talk about here, right? Not an alcoholic. Two, your husband is showing lack of control, for he is unable to stay on the water wagon even when he wants to. Notice the use of the water wagon. It implies having stopped without a spiritual solution. it means you white-knuckled through it. It's like, I'm giving it up for Lent. That's different than what we talk about, right? Whenever they use water wagon, it's actually a negative, right? Let me just do that sentence again. Your husband is showing lack of control, for he is unable to stay on the water wagon even when he wants to. He often gets entirely out of hand when drinking. He admits this is true, but is positive that he will do better. He has begun to try, with or without your cooperation, various means of moderating or staying dry. Notice it doesn't say sober. Maybe he is beginning to lose his friends. His business may suffer somewhat. He is worried at times and is becoming aware that he cannot drink like other people. He sometimes drinks in the morning, and through the day also, to hold his nervousness in check. He is remorseful after serious drinking bouts and tells you he wants to stop. But when he gets over the spree, he begins to think once more how he can drink moderately next time. We think this person is in danger. These are the earmarks of a real alcoholic. Perhaps he can still tend to business fairly well. He has by no means ruined everything. As we say among ourselves, he wants to stop. This is what I would consider a high bottom drunk, right? He is a real alcoholic, but his bottom is high enough that it doesn't create the desperation, the hopelessness, right? You need to be hopeless for you to say, now I got to do something about it. It has to get that serious. So let's see what happens with three. This husband has gone much further than husband number two. Though once like number two, he became worse. His friends have slipped away. His home is near wreck, and he cannot hold a position. Maybe the doctor has been called in, and the weary round of sanitariums, rehabs, and hospitals has begun. He admits he cannot drink like other people, but does not see why. He clings to the notion that he will yet find a way to do so. He may have come to the point where he desperately wants to stop, but cannot. This case presents additional questions which we shall try to answer for you. You can be quite hopeful of a situation like this. So we're getting more hopeful as our numbers have increased. So husband number three, we can be quite hopeful of. Why? Hopelessness. Desperation. The seriousness is becoming more apparent. Husband number four. You may have a husband of whom you are completely despair. He has been placed in one institution after another. He is violent or appears definitely insane when drunk. Sometimes he drinks on the way home from the hospital. Perhaps he has had delirium tremens. Doctors may shake their heads and advise you to have him committed. Maybe you have already been obliged to put him away. This picture may not be as dark as it looks. Many of our husbands were just as far gone, yet they got well. I'd call this the low bottom drunk, right? So if we're just making distinctions, it's strictly arbitrary. But in these examples, I would say that. Let's now go back to husband number one. Oddly enough, he is often difficult to deal with. He enjoys drinking. It stirs his imagination. His friends feel closer over a highball. Perhaps you enjoy drinking with him yourself when he doesn't go too far. You have passed happy evenings together chatting and drinking before your fire. Perhaps you both like parties which would be dull without liquor. We have enjoyed such evenings ourselves. We had a good time. We know all about liquor as a social lubricant. Some, but not all of us, think it has its advantages when reasonably used. What's AA's a position on alcohol?
Neutrality.
No position whatsoever. It's strictly up to you.
The answer I have.
Stick with what you got, right? The first principle of success is that you should never be angry. I think this is great advice to sponsors, right? The guy keeps chronic relapse, or he's not listening to anything I say. The first principle of success is that you should never be angry. Even though your husband becomes unbearable and you have to leave him temporarily, you should, if you can, go without rancor. Patience and good temper are most necessary. Our next thought is that you should never tell him what he must do about his drinking. If he gets the idea that you are a nag or a killjoy, your chance of accomplishing anything useful may be zero. He will use that as an excuse to drink more. He will tell you he is misunderstood. This may lead to lonely evenings for you. He may seek someone else to console him, not always another man. Be determined that your husband's drinking is not going to spoil your relations with your children or your friends. They need your companionship and your help. It is possible to have a full and useful life, though your husband continues to drink. This is what would be told as soon as they walked into Al-Anon, if they walked into Al-Anon, is that their peace, serenity, happiness, and usefulness to the world has nothing to do with the spouse's drinking. Our lives are not conditionally based. You know, it's not going to be based on whether we lose the job or not, or we get the divorce or not. It can't be. It's a much bigger game than that. Can't be conditional. We know women who are unafraid, even happy under these conditions. Holy crap. Do not set your heart on reforming your husband. You may be unable to do so no matter how hard you try. That whole paragraph has sponsor all over it. We know these suggestions are sometimes difficult to follow, but you will save many a heartbreak if you can succeed in observing them. Your husband may come to appreciate your reasonableness and patience. This may lay the groundwork for a friendly talk about his alcoholic problem. Try to have him bring up the subject himself. Be sure you are not critical during such a discussion. Attempt instead to put yourself in his place. Let him see that you want to be helpful rather than critical. When a discussion does arise, you might suggest he read this book, or at least the chapter on alcoholism. Why the chapter on alcoholism? It's page 30. It's step one. Got to start someplace, right? That's the place to be. Because once we accept the powerlessness stuff, there is potential there that that is the opening. You lose 20 pounds. Oh, you mean I can't control this thing? It sets the stage for the right attitude to begin now. Tell him you have been worried, though perhaps needlessly. You think he ought to know the subject better, as everyone should have a clear understanding of the risk he takes if he drinks too much. Show him you have confidence in his power to stop or moderate. Say you do not want to be a wet blanket, that you only want him to take care of his health. Thus, you may succeed in interesting him in alcoholism. He probably has several alcoholics among his own acquaintances. I underline this. You might suggest that you both take an interest in them. So getting out of oneself, not what I go and I take, but now I'm going to go give something, and I'm struggling to be, I'm a chronic relapser, but I'm going to go take interest in my acquaintance who has a problem also. It's a nice place to start, and particularly when the spouse does it with you. Drinkers like to help other drinkers. Your husband may be willing to talk to one of them. If this kind of approach does not catch your husband's interest, it may be best to drop the subject. But after a friendly talk, your husband will usually revive the topic himself. This may take patient waiting, but it will be worth it. Meanwhile, you might try to help the wife of another serious drinker, which is exactly what they tell him in Al-Anon, right? She'd want to come in and you'd want to complain about the spouse, and they'd say, okay, yeah, terrific, terrific. So why don't you go help Tommy over there, or help Mary over there, right? That's what the suggestion would be. If you act upon these principles, your husband may stop or moderate. going to stop there tonight.